Folks, welcome back to the iHealth channel, iHealth Radio, the Nutritious channel, the Fit and Fab channel. I'm going all over the place today with my guests because we're going to talk, and touch on the topic of fitness, nutrition, and wellness, and weight loss, and all the good stuff that really affects our health with someone who does this for a living. She does coaching in this area of expertise, as well as a podcast show. So Lisa Friends. She has an MSc in exercise science, health promotion and nutrition. She's the owner and head coach at Nutrition Coaching and Live, as well as the host of the Nutrition and Live podcast. She's going to take us on to the evidence-based ways to change weight and body composition today. So we're in for a big ride here. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Hurricane. Honestly, I'm really excited to speak with you. And as we were saying before you hit record, there is plenty to talk about.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is a topic that I think there is no one on this planet that cannot benefit from it, right? I mean, you know, at the end of the day, health, wellness, you know, fitness. I mean, fitness and health is just to kind of tie in nutrition. I mean, we all have to eat to live, right? So this is where you, this is your world, right? Now, before we get all started, let's get you closer to our audiences about a little background of yourself and how you got into all this world, you know, yourself. Let's do that.
Yeah, so my name is Lisa. I'm originally from Germany. I left Germany in 2009 to live in New Zealand for 10 years. And then since then, basically for the last 6 years, I have been digital nomading. So meaning I have been working remotely in various countries like Mexico, Thailand, Colombia. And at the moment, I am speaking to you from Bolivia, so still in South America. It's a lifestyle that comes with many advantages and many great things, but also some disadvantages. Not everything is just unicorns and butterflies all the time. But yeah, truly, I am proud of the life that I have created by design, because I was stuck in a very in a lifestyle that I did not enjoy living for several years. And that's also part of my mission, alongside of showing people how to be healthier and showing them how to be happier and to live in alignment with who they truly are. So mindset plays a big role, of course, as we know, with nutrition, but just generally with the way that I want to interact and talk to people in general as well. And so, yeah, my desire for the nutrition aspect, though, has also come from a personal struggle, because I was always active growing up and I didn't really have any weight issues up until I started traveling and put on about 15, 20 pounds, sort of like the what people would consider the freshman 15 normally. I put that on traveling and I just thought, okay, what do I do? And so I tried various diets, always felt super restricted. I tried low carb, low fat, paleo, whatnot, and everything just felt like there has got to be a different way. I remember I was standing in a food court in Thailand at some point, and I started crying because I thought there was nothing for me that I was allowed to eat, or that I allowed myself to eat. This one dish had rice with it, this next dish was deep fried, this other thing had some saturated fats with it, and I had placed all these food rules upon myself, and it just took away from my passion for living, because for me, being able to enjoy a piece of my grandma's cake or enjoy my vacation, of course, everything in moderation, but all of that contributes to a quality of life. And I felt like I didn't have that. And so when I then learned that it actually all just comes down to calorie balance, to learning to eat the right quantities and the right distribution of macros, for me, it was incredibly freeing and liberating. And up until this day, it is my mission to show others that way to food freedom, so that they can also live their life to the fullest and don't have to feel like they need to choose between a body that they love and a life that they love.
Well, there's a lot there. First of all, I'm just impressed about, you said you're from Germany and you started, you moved around starting 2009. I mean, first of all, it's very hard to tell that you're from Germany, just the way you talk.
Thank
I mean,
you.
So that's the one thing. I mean, not that there's anything wrong, with, the accent, that's what I'm talking about. But certainly, it's lovely to hear that. But the idea that you've traveled quite a bit around the world, and that's an interesting lifestyle, and really a lot of people, I mean, you're living the life that many people would really just die for right now, because they're, as you said, stuck somewhere, and you're traveling, people love to travel, and you're doing it while you're living your life and enjoying what you do, what you enjoy, what you're really looking forward to in life. So it's kind of like when you enjoy what you do, life becomes peachy, right? And that's what you're doing. But really, the bouncing around, in different exotic places of the world, then it's that's another one, right? That you have. And you mentioned something about the nomadic, digital nomadic, work that you do, which is again working remotely. That's something that many people are not sure how to do. I mean, it is available, it is possible, but it takes a lot of energy, a lot of work, and different ways to set yourself up. And I just, if you don't mind, before we get into the real discussion, because that in itself, I mean, it's interesting for our audiences, because a lot of
Oh, I
people are like,
love talking about it.
how the
Absolutely.
hell do you do that? I mean, by the way, you're not the first one I've had discussion. I have a good friend who's actually literally been living around the world, and we've done talk shows all around the world as he does his own thing. And multiple, guests have done that. Like, I've had talks, from Thailand, from Mexico, from all parts of the world, right? And it is interesting that some people are choosing this life to really discover the world and meet other cultures and other people and whatever, discover what's out there and not being caught up in one geographic region and just type of doing things, right? And as you discover, the world is different, right? I mean, there's many things that you're talking about, food and nutrition today, right? And that in itself varies from one place to the other. Some is better than others in terms of quality and nutrients, and we can talk about that as well today. So, but just the concept of you selecting that, I mean, obviously you ran away from a sedentary life of a more of a I guess a regular monotonous, routine level status quo kind of life to a life that has excitement. So what gives? I mean, how does that work? I mean, for someone that's really listening, like, I want to do the same thing. How do I do it? How easy is
Well, so
that?
first of all, for me, it's definitely been driven by a deep curiosity in just like life and people and the world. So I think someone has to have that internal drive of like, oh, I want to see more. There is more. If you're just thinking, oh, I want to take pictures like the ones that I see on Instagram and Santorini and wherever, go on vacation and then come back home to your safe space, and that's much better for you. I was also kind of born with a little bit of a travel bug, so even when I was a child, we lived in West Africa for a short while because my dad was like a development worker, and then just generally growing up in Europe, it's so easy to travel within Europe. So often it would just be like, oh, we have a long weekend coming up, let's go to Italy, that kind of thing. So it was definitely something that's in my blood, but nonetheless, it was also, yeah, a very, very conscious decision, and that I did before the pandemic started, as I was saying, like 2019. And when the pandemic hit, I had a lot of friends and people reach out saying, oh, I want to do the same. Show me how you work remotely. And I would say 95% of people that ask that or say that, they don't actually want the lifestyle. So what I mean by that is it actually requires more discipline than if you have a full-time job somewhere with a company, or even if you're self-employed somewhere, but you're just in one location, because your routine changes a lot all the time. And you have that, I often refer to it as, it's like you have the cake in front of your nose, but you can't eat it until you've had like your broccoli, and then you need to wait some more. So for instance, the first few weeks of me digital nomading, it was like I said yes to every invitation to go and do a yoga class in the morning, to go surfing and blah, blah. And before I knew it, it was 5 p.m. and I hadn't done a single piece of work. And so then it felt really, really difficult. And now I have that rule that I've placed upon myself in the sense of, hey, you need to get your work done first. And then if you feel like it at 4 p.m., 5 p.m., you can go surfing. You can, do whatever you want, but you still need to have that discipline. But it is a lot harder than if you don't even have that option on that day. And also then if you see the people around you who literally are on vacation, who literally just, it is their 1 week of the year or 2 weeks or so where they are spending to or focusing on just having fun. So you need to differentiate between the two. And the other thing I will add to that is I'm really someone, I love routine, and I love some stability. And that might not sound like it because I move around so much and so on, but without that routine and stability that I'm creating within that, I wouldn't be where I am today in the sense of my physical health, in the sense of my mental health, and so on. So, to give you an example, even like regardless of where I am, I get up at 5 a.m. I read my self-development books. I do my journaling. I get my 10,000 steps in per day. I seek out places that have a gym nearby. I record my food 80% of the time, and the 20% of the time I have more flexibility. So again, like that might sound really rigid, like, oh, what, you're going to Thailand or you're going to Bali or whatever, and you're doing all these things. Yeah, but it wouldn't be possible if I wouldn't do, like, again, if you're going on a 1 week vacation, that's very different. You know, by all means, stop your exercise routine if you like for that time. That's all good. But if that's what you do for 6 years without a break, you kind of need to have this framework that allows you to still be successful in whatever area of life you like. To kind of round that off with, now that I have completed more or less six years of digital nomading. I am getting, or I have gotten to the point over the last year or two where I really have a deep desire to create a home base, not necessarily to stop traveling, because even though I'm 53 countries in, I still want to keep on looking for more or discovering new ones. But I am tired of living out of my suitcase. I do want to have, I'm a very minimalistic person, but I do want to have a little bit more than just 1.5 suitcases, and maybe buy myself a couple of nicer shoes, maybe get a dog at some point, all these sort of things. So it does get to a point, and when I first started doing this, my mom was like, "What? So you're just gonna, you know, keep doing this for the rest of your life? Are you crazy, Lisa?" And I said, "No, you know, if in a year's time, in 2 years' time, in 10 years' time, I don't know, I get tired of it, I will stop, but that's just what I want to do." And yes, I've thoroughly enjoyed every minute of it.
Well, thank you. I mean, you're living a dream. And frankly, again, it is somehow everybody's dream. Now, someone could say, no, that's not my dream, which is okay. I mean, everybody's entitled to whatever they want in terms of life. But certainly, we all have the tendency to want to have that kind of flexibility, want to do what we want when we want it. But you touch on a couple of things that are very fundamental for life, regardless of where you are. And that is to have your own basic, lifestyle routine. And these are the things that are non-negotiable that you have to have at all times. And frankly, the space itself doesn't mean a different doesn't make a difference if you have that system in place. So you create your system, and basically it's portable with you. So whatever you are, you make minor adjustments, I mean, to whatever the situation is. And that's all. I mean, listen, you move in, you do podcasts, you do stuff, you're gonna need technology, you need Wi-Fi. So you have to adjust to the local, scene. But at the end of the day, your main core, to-dos are always there. So that doesn't matter whether you're in the States and Germany and France and New Zealand, it's the same thing. It's portable. You're right. I mean, there's a point where, stability kind of becomes stuff. I mean, I'm assuming you're right now still young and discovering this world, and that's actually a good thing. I mean, I personally encourage people to discover the world. I think we become better humans when we actually see other cultures and other places in the world, and you have a different feeling and respect for others. I think that's just because when you're consistently in one, cocoon, if you want to call it, and nicely, you see what you see and you know what you know, and that's about it. But once you discover it, it was like, well, there's more to this than this particular space, right? And so that's something that you're, and by the way, this is the right time to do it. As long as you have the energy and the means and nothing else in this world, I mean, no kids, maybe, I don't know, I can't judge you, but I'm assuming you can do this, a lot easier if you don't. But that's the thing. Like, now, obviously, if you get to a settled life where you have family and stuff, things become different. But this is the right time. You're doing it and you're getting out of the bucket list. You can check that out. I mean, 53 countries is not too shabby. I mean, you're almost like the one third of the world. And so you gotta have a few more destinations, and you're already like, ahead of the game that most of people have not even discovered their own, territories. And that's a fact, right? And so it's a big deal. So thank you. And this is like really a good tool for people. I mean, it's all about management. It's about understanding who you are, how you operate, and figure out a way and a system. By the way, this doesn't have to be wherever you are. I mean, well, it doesn't have to be when you travel. This can be whatever you are. I mean, even those that are stable, having a job or stuff, sometimes we fail at doing that, having that daily routine going up. You know what you're going to do. Step one, two, journal, as you said, read book, these things, doing your steps, doing your work and movement, exercise, blah, 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 blah. We have all the stability, and we still don't do it, and that's sad, you know, for us, for most of us, right? And so, and by the way, that's what we have to drive ourselves to do. And I think your coaching work, you know, helps people kind of identify those routines and how they can specifically work on themselves to guide themselves in a particular way that makes sense for them. Now, you've gone through this challenge, and how do you adjust? I mean, really, I mean, you've talked about like that you've been able to do it, but how, is there something that you do different? Like in terms of just like, okay, I'm going to be in this culture now, but switch on and, you know, everything else good. How does that work? I mean, just for some.
I mean, so many great points, and you're absolutely right. Like many of the clients that I coach, first of all, they travel a lot for work as well. So a lot of the things that I try to live by, I also encourage my clients to do, or I want to, you know, practice what I preach. That's part of the reason why I do this. But yeah, of course, if someone wants to lose weight or just maintain a healthy body weight, and they travel 2 weekends or twice a month for work, and every single time that happens, they completely lose their routine, we're going to have an issue. So we're going to have to work on, okay, how can we make, even if you don't have a hotel gym, how can you still get your steps in? How can you select at your work lunches or so? How can you select a high quality protein source with some veggies and maybe reduce the carbs and reduce the coffee and the sugary things and all of that more as a habit, and communicating that clearly with the people around you, or becoming more firm in your own choices as opposed to giving in when everyone else is having drinks all the time or so. So it comes down to self-confidence as well, but a lot of it is definitely just making sure we're establishing good routines one at a time. And I always say, not one thing is not going to work for everybody. So I don't want anyone to copy my routine, because that's my routine, and I've played with it for numerous years, since 2017, 2018, in essence, in the sense of like, how long do I want to meditate for? How many pages do I aim to read a day? Is it just one page? Sometimes even five, like whatever. Like I think there, if we condense it down, a morning routine could take 15 minutes or 20 minutes. For someone else who has a bit more time or who loves it, it can take an hour or two or more. So it's very, very individual. And a big driver in, because you said, like, what it is a very different kind of life, and a big driver for me, or now is a good time to do that. I was married, now I am traveling solo, and I don't have any kids. So at 35, that's part of the reason probably why I'm also starting to feel like I want to settle down. Nonetheless, I have, on my many journeys, I have seen families travel together, people taking their kids out of school and just saying, hey, we're going to do a year where we're seeing various countries and we're going to homeschool you. So I'm saying that not to encourage everyone to leave their steady homes, and not at all. I think there's also something beautiful about that, and not everyone is made for sort of a nomad life. But I'm saying, if you have a dream within you, you can make it work, no matter your age, no matter your family situation, you can make it work. Don't use any excuses. I did that for many years, where I said, oh, isn't it just normal to not enjoy your life? Isn't it normal to be happy like 1 out of 10 days? No, it should be the other way around. No one can always be happy, but you should be happy most of the time. Or you should feel at least content with your life. And I had some examples of that kind of going wrong, where people would always say, I'm going to do that when I retire. I'm going to do that when the kids have left the house. So my best friend died when she was 18 in a car accident, and she had never ever left Germany. She never had the opportunity. And I thought it was really sad, because part of her dreams, or like her room was decorated with, oh, I want to go there. And there was this map. So that was one of my early impressions of, like, you know, don't wait with your dreams. And then a few years ago, during the pandemic, actually, I was living in Mallorca, which is a Spanish island, and where my uncle has some property, and he bought that property now that he's retired. And I said to him, oh, wow, you must be so proud of having fulfilled your dream and everything else. And he said to me, Lisa, I am proud of it, but I regret the 40 whatever years that I spent just putting off my dream and working hard, being a douche to my kids, not making time for them, being a douche to my employees. At the same time, now that I have this property, I have back issues, so I can't fulfill the dream of creating a vineyard here and just doing all the things that I wanted. So his message to me was also like, yeah, you need to find a fine line between living in the present and working on an even better future. And I think that's really what life is all about for everyone, not just putting things off. You should also not just live in the present. So we kind of need to find that balance there. But yeah, as it comes to how to establish or how to pivot, I guess, depending on country to country. I mean, the funny thing is, nowadays I see more similarities in the world than I see differences. Yes, of course. The infrastructure might be different, or things that do seem different is like, for instance, here I can hardly get supplements shipped from anywhere. Like, it's really difficult. For I tried to ship someone in, or did ship something in with a company called iHerb. They sh ship internationally and pride themselves on shipping internationally. And then lo and behold, it got held up at the border. So I had to pay like $300 for five supplements at the border or at the immigration just to get those five supplements out. So, long story short, I'm not gonna order any supplements again. Whereas, of course, if I was in Europe, in the US, in Canada, you can get your Amazon Prime overnight delivery, no issues there at all. Or then here, for instance, something like a low-fat Greek yogurt might cost like $15, whereas if you, yeah, it's ridiculous because no one eats that, and it's like such a luxury good. Whereas, if you stick with your chicken and rice, you can get by with like less than $1 in a nice meal. So, those are the differences that I'm dealing with. But nonetheless, especially since I'm mostly staying in larger cities, they all have gyms. People are always, especially in gyms or in cafes, if they see you co-working, if they see you looking at a map or so, people are so friendly and so much friendlier than you might think. Because I've often been told, like, oh, wow, you travel alone in Latin America, especially, isn't that dangerous? Or when I was in the Middle East as well, isn't that dangerous? And clearly, you have to have some sort of awareness of what areas of the city should you go into and what you shouldn't, what time of the day is it, and am I really going to wear my nicest watch and speak on my phone, hold my phone in the hand while I'm walking? Maybe not the best idea. I might just wear some more simple clothes and maybe stick to daytime and put my phone away. But apart from that, I have actually never had anything bad happen to me. And I do think a lot of that is also mindset or what you attract. Like, if you emanate a very, very fearful energy, then you're more likely to run into some trouble, in my experience, or from what I believe. Not saying that anyone who's ever run into trouble has brought that upon themselves, but still, yeah, I think if we believe in the good in people, generally we're gonna be a little bit better off.
Well, thank you, Lisa. First of all, I appreciate you're really giving us a very nice picture of how it works, because really, not only you're talking about adaptation, you adapt well, you also are, you learn how to adjust to circumstances and know where to go, not to do. You certainly do your homework. You know what country you're in, you know what cities you're in, you know what the neighbors. So you're doing all the stuff. You're actually talking the right stuff as far as safety is concerned. I mean, you know that the tools, that the things that will attract, things bad to you, you're avoiding. Like you said, you don't flash your phone, you don't flash your good stuff, because especially in parts of the world where there may be financial problems, right? So people will steal for a couple of dollars to survive. And you're right. And then the other thing that you talked about is the adjustment or adaptation to circumstances. I mean, as you said, I mean, chicken and rice could be cheaper than Greek yogurt, right? I mean, it depends where you are. And by the way, the safety issue can be anywhere. It doesn't matter what part of the world you're in. I mean, you could be in Europe and the US and still be, you have to be careful where you could be in New York and be careful where you are, because, your phone may disappear. It's as simple as that. So there's a lot of things, but it is an important piece for people at least to listen. But you said something that's very powerful for our audiences that I just want to take 1 second to highlight, is the idea of time is of the essence. Time is today. Time is now. And you're right. Many people dream, but they never get to fulfill their dreams, or they postpone things that they want to do until, okay, when I'm gonna get older. And the fact of the matter is, folks, as you get older, you will realize that your body does not do the same thing that you was able to do the stuff. And I don't care how strong you are. Listen, I'm fit. I do all this stuff, but you know what? I know that this body today is not the same as 10 years ago. No matter what I do, and I eat right, I do the stuff, but this is me learning over in time how my body responds to things. Yes, I can do better than someone maybe at my age if they're not doing the same things, but it doesn't mean that your body is going to be always the same. And there's all kind of factors that can affect that. And so that's one thing. And you're right. Like, yeah, I can work crazy for 40 years to have all the things that we want in terms of, physical things, right? Land, places, I can have a yacht, I can have all the stuff. But if I don't have the energy and the body to actually support that, lifestyle, then you're not going to do anything. You'll be looking at things and that's all there is. So you're not even enjoying it. So enjoy life while you can. And as you, I'm sorry to hear about your friend. And I've had actually similar, cases of friends that never made it past the 18 mark. And, I literally, I was thinking about someone that we went to school together back in elementary. And, a couple of them and one of my neighbors, they died very early. I mean, I have teenagers now, so I was reflecting on that in terms of kids and how life, can be, that brutal. I mean, it is part of life, right? And it ends quick and, you haven't even done anything, right? And so while you have the energy, while you have the capabilities, if you can afford them, do it. Travel the world. Also, I love what you said about that there's more common stuff around the world than uncommon stuff. Humans are the same. There's hospitality, there's nice, people out everywhere. People will always be, trying to help no matter what. There's a lot of people that want to do good deeds. Now, of course, there's a minority of the ones that do the opposite of that. And if you know your surroundings, you know where to go and how to avoid that, you can. So that's another thing that, I appreciate you sharing with our audiences, because again, people sometimes have these feelings like, oh my God, now I want to ask the biggest question for today's show is the people travel. And they tend to gain weight, as you said, because they like to eat. I mean, we have this discussion all the time about cruising. I mean, you go on a cruise ship, you wind up 10 pounds, a week later. That's the minimum average, I think, of what a person gains in that time frame of 7 days. It is very difficult to eat right and enjoy the healthiest lifestyles that you have when you actually travel. Now, it's not difficult if you know what you're doing. But in general, people let go. As you said, you got a week, 2 weeks, whatever. I'm just gonna enjoy my life, and do all the stuff. Now, and a true story, like people look at me funny because I don't gain the weight when I go on a cruise. I don't gain weight because I have a routine, and the routine is there's a gym. So like people say, you go to vacation and you just lounge. No, I go to vacation. I still do my gym. I still do my stuff. I do my walks. I do my dance. I do all the stuff that I need to do. So life, actually, that's what I enjoy. I go to my spa. I do all the stuff that I'm supposed to be doing. And I eat. But even eating, I don't spend my whole time eating and shoving food. I do it, in proportion. So if I take you like I crave something today, well, I eat it today. I'm not gonna eat tomorrow and the day after and so on. So every day I sample things. And so there is a way. That's just my personal way. But that is a big question because people are, having, I mean, obesity, weight gain, I mean, these are the nutrition today is really atrocious in what we have. So there's a lot of things that are affecting who we are and how we are. I mean, even from, I guess, I don't know if we evolved in genetics, where we're not doing well in terms of metabolism and stuff like that. There's so many things going on with us and we see it. I mean, and obviously some parts of the world are worse than others. I mean, I'm in the States. I mean, it is rampant in terms of obesity and weight, gain and things like that. It is a problem with nutrition. Now there's a lot of talk about it. So in your work, and in your discovery, what are some of the factors that really make a difference in terms of how do we keep ourselves healthier, slimmer, sleeker? And by the way, healthier doesn't mean slim. I mean, you can be healthy and not slim. You can have good mass and everything, but not having excess, I guess, body fat or excess weight that is unnecessary because it gives you all the stuff. How do you help people identify what that problem, what the source is, and how to adjust, whatever they are?
Love the
That's a
question.
lot of stuff.
Yeah. And Absolutely. But yeah, I want to add two more things to what you said beforehand. So first of all, in regards to the death of people that happens too early, I'm or have become a big fan of Stoicism, and one of the philosophies alongside of let go of the things you can't control and take control of the things that you can. One of them, or another sort of mantra that the Stoics have and had, is something that they call memento mori, and it means like think of death every day. And while that sounds quite morbid to some people, or they want to avoid thinking about especially the death of loved ones, not so much their own death sometimes, but the death of their loved ones. The Stoics say you should think of the death of your children, of your partner, of your parents every single day, because it, first of all, makes you appreciate life more and spend that quality time more with them. And second of all, it's going to happen. Like you might die before your kids, hopefully, but it could also happen the other way around, and you don't want to, like, it's not in our hands. And so if we think of the things that are out of our control on a more regular basis, it picks us puts us more in touch with reality. And I like that for one, because I find it quite helpful. And the other thing that you mentioned was I'm gonna continue with the question, because otherwise I'm gonna get on
No
a wrong
worries, go ahead.
track. Yes, but yeah, I want to touch on the part of the travel first, managing the travel in a healthier way before just going even broader. And I think you said it really, really nicely. Many people think, okay, I'm on vacation, I don't need to do any exercise at all, I'm gonna stop doing everything that I normally do. Maybe I've just finished a super extreme diet before going on this trip because I want to look great in my bathing suit, and so I'm even hungrier when I go on that diet. I think that that is often the mistake number one that people make, because you start your vacation, you're starved, and you literally want to eat everything that's inside after your 8-week crash diet. But you don't know that your body at that stage is even more prone to put the weight back on. Your body is literally primed to increase the fat cells and put on more fat storage, because it's thinking, oh, the next hunger period is probably just around the corner, I better add some extra fat cells. So I would not advise that. I would say if you do a diet before a vacation because you want to look great in a bathing suit, give yourself more time and do a more moderate approach, maybe even a couple of weeks, making sure you're finishing your dieting phase a couple of weeks before you go on vacation and so on, to give your body a chance to actually regulate those hunger signals. But yeah, I would say this. If we look at a vacation day, my recommendation is almost always to include some form of movement, not because you feel like you need to work it off, or because I want people to punish themselves, or because it's not possible to take some time off from training. No, not at all, but exactly because of what you said, it keeps you in the right mindset. If you work out in the morning, you're probably going to choose something different at the breakfast buffet than if you drag yourself to the buffet, like, and you're still in your kind of robe thingy, hungover from the night before, and you're going to crave those waffles and chicken and with a ton of syrup and so on. So I would say having an active start to the day where you still do something for yourself first, something that makes you feel good, and then you choose something lighter, is a really, really good start. But aside from that, I also advise people to just kind of stick it with one more indulgent meal throughout the day. And I know that that's difficult on a cruise because it's all you can eat from basically 24/7. But if you say to yourself, I'm going to still have a filling breakfast, I might choose an egg white omelet with some fruit and maybe my favorite coffee, maybe a little bit of oatmeal or so. Or you could even say, right, I'm going to split that cinnamon roll with my partner because I really, really want to try it. That's much better than if you load your whole plate up with everything that's on the buffet and you're just giving yourself a free-for-all right from the get-go. And then having a lighter lunch, I think, works well for most people too, because we want to stay in our bathing suit, we want to go and explore, and then maybe having a more indulgent dinner. Where I also give some tips, like, okay, are you a person that really likes their various spirits or alcohols and wants to experiment with that a little bit more? Or are you someone who can say, no, I'm actually fine, I'm sticking with one drink, but in exchange for that, I'm gonna have dessert as well? So I encourage my clients and like anyone listening to think about what they allow themselves in the sense of how they would talk to a child. Because if a child says to you, Mom, Dad, can I have anything that I want to today? Or so you're probably going to say, hold back a little bit. Otherwise, that child's going to throw up and you're going to be the one cleaning them up or taking care of them all throughout the night. You might just say, hey, you've already had two of this candy. Let's quit it for now. You can have some dessert tonight. And so if you talk to yourself in that same way, as opposed to just letting everything come to you and letting your intuition guide you, these foods are designed for you to overeat on them. Keep that in mind. Your mind, your willpower is probably not that strong. So we need to have a little bit of a game plan as we head into these things. And when I travel, I do still take protein powder with me because I find carbs and fats are always easy to come by. Protein is usually, is at least for breakfast, kind of on the lower side. Now, if we're talking all you can eat buffet, there is no shortage of meat and fish, and that's awesome. So, in that case, I normally suggest if you go back several times or if you plan to go back several times to the buffet, see that your first plate is mostly vegetable than protein. And just filling up on that at first, it's going to curb your hunger. It's going to curb your satiation so that you're no longer just going by your cravings, which they do that really, really well in restaurants. They put the bread basket in the middle so that you fill up on that. It's not satiating at all. You just kind of snack on that. And that's several, like a couple of hundred calories that just go nowhere. And you're not feeling any different for it. On the contrary, your blood sugar is actually spiked a bit more than if you had your veggies and your protein first. So that's often what I recommend, especially also if, again, people go and go for work lunches or so. Let's find something that's high in fiber and some protein. And then if you still want some of those carbier dishes, if you saw some amazing looking and smelling pizza and you want to go back and have a slice, by all means go and get it. But I would also say like reduce the carbs that you can have at any time. Like you don't need to eat that white rice at an all you can eat buffet because you can literally have that for next to no money any day of the week. Or the bread roll that just kind of tastes meh, probably been sitting there half a day and you're just finishing it because it's on your plate. I don't think you need to eat that. So sort of having a good evaluation of what's worth my budget and what isn't. I think that can go a really long way. And if we still are able to make sleep a priority, I'm a big fan of that because it also helps us regulate the hunger throughout the day. So sometimes we, might have a bit of a more irregular sleep schedule in the sense of going to bed later and shifting our sleep time that way. But as long as we can still try and get 7, 8 hours of sleep opportunity, that's probably a big one. And all of these foundational things are helpful for managing and regulating our weight no matter what time. Like even if we're talking about throughout the holidays, you wanna, if you're at a Thanksgiving dinner and there are several foods in the middle of the table, maybe don't start with the marshmallow sweet potato casserole and go for the beans and the turkey at first, filling up on that before you then have something else that's higher in carbs.
Well, that's a lot of advice there in terms of strategy food wise. But here's the thing. First of all, I just want to reiterate, to the audiences, Lisa is an expert in this. That's her education. That's her background in terms of promotion, nutrition, and health, and so on, exercise. So all this stuff is not just someone who's done it because they just experienced it. There's someone that knows how it all works and integrates in our life. By the way, the example of the cruise, I just selected that because that's where a lot of people indulge in free access to food. But really, even any travel, typically people tend to eat more burgers and fries and on the go with street food and snacks and ice cream and drink all you want, a lot of sugary stuff, and that's all adds up to the thing. And now again, it's there's a lot of different ways to travel. Some people travel healthy in terms of like they do a lot of walking, exercise, this stuff. But a lot of people, they just go relax. They want to lounge at a bar, I mean, at a bar, at the beach, by a bar, and drink all they want, and cocktails and mocktails, whatever their flavors are. But the idea is they just kind of get all the sugar. Now, so that takes me to the other question. Drinks, alcohol. I mean, that's sugar galore. What is your take on sugar intake and, you know, how it impacts the health and the body in general when it comes to nutrition? I mean, is there an advice to tell people, you know, about in terms of your expertise?
Yeah, so firstly, I'm all for disconnecting and relaxing because I do think we all live very stressful lives, some more so than others. But generally speaking, I think as a whole world population, we can do with a lot more relaxing and going within. But the point that you said, where it's just about you lay by the beach or by the pool, and it's that overindulgence where you actually feel gross at the end of the day. That's where I don't want people to get to, where they come back from, or maybe they're even just like halfway through their vacation, they're starting to feel gross about themselves. That's you're not you can't tell me that you're actually enjoying that way of traveling or vacationing. So yeah, I think some moderation even on that front goes a long way. But to answer the question of sugar and drinks, so number one, I do not, or I'm not a fan of drinking your calories in general, meaning any really like the sugary coffees or sodas, sugary sodas. I think it's an easy way to reduce calorie intake. And on the flip side, it's an easy way to gain weight without feeling more satiated or getting anything from those things. So the more we can limit sugary beverages, the better for sure. So if you're currently used to drinking your Mountain Dew or Coke or whatever, even just switching to Zero or Diet Coke or so is going to have a big benefit. Yes, I know that there's more discussions about artificial sweeteners and blah blah, but the research is very clear that if you are able to lose weight by reducing the sugar intake through beverages, that in and of itself is going to have more benefits than a little bit of artificial sweeteners could potentially do in if you maintain the higher body fat percentage. So losing or getting to a healthy body fat stage is so helpful and healthful in any aspect. So if that means you need to resort to some diet beverages, I think that's a good option instead of just having to drink water. So to that the point of alcohol, I think that there is a little bit more leeway there as long as it's not a daily habit. I personally have chosen and not to drink any alcohol anymore. I stopped drinking any alcohol maybe 2.5 years ago. I just feel better without it. But even before that, I maybe had a drink once every 2 weeks or so. And even with my clients nowadays, even if they're in the weight loss phase, we manage to fit in one or two drinks per week if they really want to. If it's in a healthy way, I do encourage them to pick something that's a little bit less calorie dense than your huge cocktail. So maybe a glass of wine, or just a nice gin and soda or something like that. That's not quite as calorically dense as a big cocktail with some creamy whatever and then the fruit on top of that. The one caveat I will say to that, if someone is going through perimenopause or menopause, the less alcohol we can consume during that time, the better you're going to feel. Unfortunately, I hate to be the bearer of bad news on that front, but it's just an extra toxin in the body, and your body's already struggling to eliminate toxins in our environment. And then throw on top of that the hormonal imbalances that you've got going on throughout that time. So if someone wants to improve their hormonal situation throughout perimenopause and menopause, that is the biggest tip I can give you to cut out alcohol, unfortunately. And you know what? I have found, I think when we switch to an alcohol-free lifestyle, at first it bothers other people usually more than it bothers us. So you might get to a party or an event and everyone's like, oh, why aren't you drinking? And if you then say, no, I don't want to, they see it as a little bit of an offense on them. Like, why does she think she's better? She doesn't need to drink. At least that was my experience. But I can have as much fun without the alcohol as I would with it. And once you become the person that's kind of like known who doesn't drink, they won't even ask anymore. I think where it's more difficult is if you just say like, oh, I might have one or two, and then you're at two and they're like, oh, come on, just one more, and you're already at that stage where you have lowered inhibition, and so you're like, oh yeah, okay, another one, and then they know that they can sway you, so it just keeps going and going. So it's almost easier to say, no, I won't drink at all for this month or two, or and give it a try that way than it sometimes is to say like, oh, maybe one or two.
Well, it's true. I mean, that's a fact. I mean, I don't drink, but I've always been questioned, well, why don't you drink? I mean, there's a lot of reasons I don't drink. I mean, one is just it's my religion concept, you know, but also it's really me. I just don't, I mean, I could, nobody's going to stop me, but it's not something that I'm interested in. But I can have just as much fun back in the days. I mean, we would go to a place, I will have a lot more fun than my friends who actually literally, you know, drinking more. I mean, they're like, what's wrong with you? I'm like, I have too much sugar. I just drank, you know, an orange on OJ and it's kicking. The sugar is kicking. So they actually, the joke was on me. They said, don't give him OJ because he goes nuts. And actually, that was my little thing. But again, similarly, it's sugar, right? So it does that. I mean, the difference is just the alcohol, you know, but really it's all the same. But it's all how we deal with things and how we do it. But you're right. It's just sometimes we drink and do things because of society, because the environment, the entourage. And at the end of the day, nobody, if you get sick, nobody's going to be in your body. It's your body that's affected, not theirs. And so, yeah, listen, that's your thing. You know, you want to drink all you want. But this here is mine, and I take care of this temple here. So I'm going to take care of it nicely, and I want to maintain. And by the way, someone's like, well, you can still get sick. Well, I can still get sick. I'm just, my odds can be different now because I'm not doing all the bad things. I'm not destroying and doing Russian roulette with my body if I don't have to. And so those are some of the things. But I love what you said about the concept of how you talk to your clients and you work with them to kind of, you know, phase out things slowly, and eventually they'll discover that, and it's going to take us some time, because obviously if you had a lifetime of a certain way of living, and you can't just cut it off and stuff. And that's exactly, and I love what you said about the where people going on vacation, they just like, oh, I want to look good in my bikini and this and the other, whatever. And then the next thing they know, they're like, you know, they're really starving themselves for a couple of weeks or stuff. And then they're like, hey, let's go out, all out. And then it creates that reverse, you know, problem. And now your body's just like out of whack. And so it's not consistent enough to make, you know, the system work and operate, you know, optimally, right? So that's the problem with a lot of us when we decide to, and that goes for weddings, it goes for parties, it goes for all kinds of stuff. Especially we hear this, like, you know, now the spring is gonna be around, at least in the northern hemisphere. And now we're gonna start like, hey, let's get that beginning line ready, and let's get the waist, you know, trimmed a little bit. So, and let's hit the gym and getting ready for the beach time, right? And that's the thing. I think it's a problem in the society as opposed to being consistent, where as you said, I love it. Movement should be your part of daily activity no matter what. I mean, we're humans, we're supposed to be active, not, you know, and a lot of even our lifestyles are different now. A lot of people are sitting on desks, you know, all day for work. I was talking to someone yesterday and we were talking about this, and the lady was telling me, like, you know, she spent a lot of time, 12 hours, 10 hours sitting on a desk. And she gained a lot of weight. And now, obviously, and she said it literally, with movement, she's been able to change and drop a lot of pounds just by doing more work, you know, work out a little bit, you know, on a regular basis. She changed her lifestyle, cut the sugars, the drinks, the sodas and stuff, drinking more like seltzer water and stuff, changed her life. And those are like minor changes that and stuff. And that's the question that I was going to ask you next, is that we often confuse diet and weight loss. You know, because I don't think they're the same, you know, because there's a lot of diets, and you know, weight loss is, you know, weight gain versus weight loss. I mean, you're just getting mass or losing mass. The question, what kind of mass? Is it fat mass or is it muscle mass? You know, and so let's talk about that concept, the dieting versus like how to really maneuver our body to gain the right mass and not the fat mass. You know, while by losing the weight, that is, you know, it sounds very funny, like gaining mass by losing weight at the same time, as well as without, you know, a particular diet, or does a diet make a difference and make sense? What do you think? What do you say to that?
Yeah, so I mean, firstly, Hurricane, you've mentioned my absolute favorite word, and that is consistency. Like, out of all the words that I can pick when speaking with my clients, I just want to hone in on consistency with anything and everything, because no intensity, no amount of intensity of, or no best plan in the world is going to do anything if someone's not going to follow it consistently and adhere to it. So I just want people to highlight that and think about when they're engaging or when they're thinking about how to go about fat loss, or building any new habits, like how consistent can I be with that on the long in the long run? So yes, absolutely on that. And when just going back to the question about the sugar earlier, we only spoke about the drinks. And when it comes to sugary foods, I have the same philosophy. Like, I don't like thinking in black and white and forbidding something for myself or for people, because I've just found I'm a little bit of a rebel. And so if someone tells me you can't have that, I want it even more. And
I think
so,
all of us
yeah,
have a little bit of
so
that.
as long as I know I have the option of having that, I actually can tell myself I don't really need it. Or if I have a little bit of it, that's enough then. And so practicing with the clients, like, hey, you can have a little bit of chocolate every night if you really wanted to, it's fine. Or specifically the sugary foods, I do like emphasizing that your body can actually process them best, either around your workout, so like when you're actually going to utilize that quick energy, or in the evening when you're ready to sort of drift off. If you're just consuming the sugary muffin in the middle of the day, you shouldn't be surprised if you get an energy crash afterwards, or if that's your breakfast, also not a great habit or start to your day. But generally speaking, I say let's treat it like it's something special. If as long as it's not something that's like part of your every meal or every morning or so, and you're just like, hey, every Saturday I love going to the donut shop with my kids. We split three donuts between the five of us, and it's amazing, and it's a ritual, and you make it something special for me. That's something that I'm totally up for, and I can say to my clients, we can build that into your day, no problem at all. But yeah, just wanted to round that part off. Now, when it comes to weight loss, of course, yeah, we always say weight loss, but what most people really want is fat loss, right? No one wants to just look skinny fat, which is exactly what happens if people do extreme diets and they don't pay attention to what form of exercise they do or what their diet consists of. And for me, generally speaking, if you can't imagine your style of diet, and I say style of diet because yes, of course, in order to lose body fat, we need to be in a calorie deficit. But still, if you can't imagine the way of eating your diet, even post diet, you're doing the wrong thing. So some people say, like, oh, I'm just going to do keto for 6 weeks. Yeah, okay, but then what? Like, after that, can you really see yourself in 2 years' time do just keto? If the answer is yes, by all means, cool, go for it. That's your choice. But for most people, the answer is going to be no. They're going to want to have some sort of pizza or bread or pasta when they're on that vacation in Italy, and not follow their keto diet. So I think we need to choose habits and a style of eating in a calorie deficit that we can also see ourselves doing later in a larger portion once we've reached our goals. And on top of that, we need to make sure that it is high in protein. And by that, I mean, I'm usually aims for something around 1 gram per pound of goal body weight. And with my clients, the reason for that is, number one, it's more satiating than just carbs and fats. Number two, it helps us build that lean body mass or maintain that lean body mass as we're dieting, so that we do not look skinny fat or just someone where you pulled out the plug out of a blow-up boat and at the end it's just deflated. So no definition to that. And that's something I hear so often, especially from the female clients. Oh, I just want to have more definition, more shape. Well, girl, you're gonna have to weight lift some weights, and you're gonna need to eat more protein for that, because with just like barely some breadcrumbs here and there and only vegetables and doing your cardio, you're not gonna get any definition. So in order to lose body fat, to maintain that lean muscle mass, we need to actually send our body the stimulus to maintain or build that shape. And that is strength training. There's nothing wrong with cardio. On the contrary, people should also include cardio. But I do recommend people to do at least 2 to 3 strength sessions per week as well, in order to maintain that muscle mass, especially as we age, also for posture, for functionality, and so on. So those are really the two biggest things I want people to think about, aside from sustainability, protein and strength training.
Well, thank you. It's amazing. Like, you hit in all the markers because the concept, for example, you said using a specific, diet like keto diet, right? It's not consistent, as again, going back to the same word, you can only do it for so much. Yes. And you'll get results. But then, and that's really where problem, happens with diets, is that people are continuously changing diets. You know, there's a new sexy one. Let's do this one. This one. This works. And they work, by the way. All these things, that obviously, they're in the business, you know, and they work. You know, they've been around. Most of these, you know, you hear all of them, and there's always new ones. But they all operate in a different angle of the body system. So they kind of take keto, is it fills you up, right? You feel like, oh, I don't want to eat, so that's it. And therefore, your body does not crave the sweets and stuff. So kind of like it works that way, and vice versa. You know, you do another type of diet, blah, blah, blah. It changes the dynamics. But it's to your point, you can only do it for a period of time. I mean, the consistent piece is that you need to have a certain way of eating, certain times of the day, and complement that with the right healthy mix of exercise. And I love what you said. It's not just the cardio, because you will lose the weight, but you'll be just like, you know, a flag. I mean, you know, everything is like wiggly, you know, and you know, I mean, I'm just being as frankly as, you know, you could get, because there's no muscle, you know, that is replacing. And that's the thing. Some people, they have that fear. Well, I'm losing weight, you know, but what's going on with my body? I'm not, you know, getting, well, you got to tone up, you got to build. And I think that's the other thing. And it is very, we hear this all the time. I've heard this many times. Oh, I don't want to get, look like a man. And, you know, no offense, right? You know, like, you know, the
bulky,
big bulky guy. Yeah. I mean, it's going to take forever. Even men cannot get that bulky that quick. Yeah, it doesn't matter. I mean, you can carry a lot of weight and lift a lot of stuff. I mean, to get like the competitive, you know, mass looking, you know, male or female version, you know, that's a whole different level of protein intake and workout in 10, 7 days. And, you know, it's, so that's not the average you and I out there, right? You can work out 5 days a week and do your hour to hours mixture of, you know, body, you know, weight and stuff like that. It's not going to get you to that, you know, chiseled big mass level where you're like, you can't even, you know, bend your arms, right? So that's a whole different training concept. The regular person is not going to do that. So I think that's the fear that, and I hear, you know, my wife does, you know, fitness training as well, and she hears this all the time. Oh, I don't want to look like, you know, a guy, you know, with all these big muscles. No, you're not going to look like that. Trust me. You can do weights every day and it's not going to look that way. And if you want, I mean, you'll have to do a lot of resistance and a lot of protein and almost zero fat. And so there's a lot of stuff that goes in there. But it's a big problem for a lot of people, because I think that inhibits, you know, the ideology that, oh, I don't want to do this. You need to do some, and that's the other thing. I love what you said about age. As we age, we lose, you know, muscle, and muscle is your protector as you get older for your bones and stuff. So, you know, you need a cushion, you need a little bumper, right? You know, if you hit something and you have no bumper, you're going to hit the bones right on, right? If you have a little of mass, I mean, I'm going to give an example. I watch martial arts because I've been in martial arts, and you always see movies, people hit each other. When you get a big guy, you bounce on that guy, right? That's because they have cushion, they have a little bump. But if they were skinny and you hit them, now Bruce Lee was skinny, but I mean, you know, I haven't seen one that hit Bruce Lee actually in one of the movies that are, you know, there's a few seasons, but you know what I mean? So the concept is like very difficult to realize that we need to have a balance in everything. Balance and consistency. I think those are like two elements that have to be part of life. And that's actually for everything that we do in life. And when it comes to health, well, you know, it's very similar, but in the health and fitness and nutrition, those are the core items. And the minute we deviate, the minute we have issues. And that's what we have. Like people eat, and that's the other thing, people eat all the time. So my question to you, is there a need for us to eat like 3-4 times a snack all over the place? And especially the type of nutrients. So what's your take on eating frequently and eating the junk that's available to us? I mean, even food today is junk. I mean, people tend to eat all kind of bad things. Now, you travel around the world, and I know as you discover the world flavors and cultures and foods, you know, some cultures have healthier, you know, food habits than others. So let's talk about that. I know we're coming on the hour here, but this is like an interesting piece of the discussion, if you don't mind, you know, sharing your experience on that.
No, I love it. I think it really is super, super important. And you're touching on such a good point, because that constant food availability really is a big issue, in the sense of you get up, you have a sugary coffee, you might grab a muffin on the go, you get to the office, you eat the next thing there, and then before you know it, it's midday break, and you have like, it's just, I call it grazing, because it's not really for many, especially many women. I actually see that and they say, I really haven't had a proper meal. I'm like, okay, well, what have you had? And they go from like having a couple of hundred calories there and here 100, and then they finish their child's food, and then they have somewhat of like a half sandwich for lunch, and then they kind of, like, it's just like these tiny little things, but their satiation never fully sets in because they're never actually eating a high quality meal with some vegetables and a decent amount of protein in them. So while I am not a believer in there is a set meal frequency that everyone needs to adhere to. So there's not like a magic number where I'm like this one meal a day type of hype is all the thing. Also not there everyone needs to eat three meals or everyone needs to eat three meals and two snacks. No, that doesn't exist. It goes back to our point of adherence and what's sustainable for you. Some people are waking up really hungry. And they can't wait to eat their breakfast. Other people, they're so busy in the morning, their whole system is just not really receptive. They have no issues doing intermittent fasting and they'd much rather have a larger dinner. That's cool also. The most important thing overall still is how many calories do you consume throughout the day and are you hitting your protein? So the issue that I also often see with that grazing type thing is people don't get to their protein goal because it's everything is just more like carby and snacky type food, so that's not going to include sufficient enough protein. So when I speak with my clients, that's kind of the conversation that we have. When are you most hungry? What's sustainable for your lifestyle? In most cases, that results into somewhere between three, sometimes two, and five meals. And five by five meals, I mean three meals and two snacks. So it's very person dependent. It's dependent on how many calories they have to play with, so to speak. But yeah, that constant snacking that you're talking about, where it's just we're constantly triggered also to eat something because we look on our phone and then on Instagram, someone might be posting a food story, or you hear on the radio this and that food, you need to try it. And then you drive past the next drive-through and you're like, oh, I should eat that. So if we don't set ourselves up with some rules in the sense of I'm actually prepping my meals Monday through Friday, because otherwise I know I'm going to think about, oh, what do I crave? You shouldn't always think about what you crave. Not every meal needs to be the most delicious one. That's what, every now and then on the weekend or what family dinners are for, where you actually have the time to settle down and eat more mindfully. But during the day, when you're busy and when you're on the go, there's nothing wrong with having your staple meals in the sense of your tuna and veggies and sweet potato or ground beef and rice and whatever else it might be. But sometimes I think people want too much variety and almost and want to eat too intuitive all the time, in the sense of every meal needs to be amazing.
Well, thank you. You've emphasized quite a bit on protein and vegetables. Protein. I've heard you like repeat that multiple times. Now, I get it. I mean, because those are like the main foundations of what we need, right? And they cover a lot of stuff. Carbs, not so much. I mean, we probably can live without them, right? And so that's the thing. Like a lot of people, like the pyramid of food that we've been taught was, I think, completely off, right? And so let's not. We can go there actually, but that's another hour discussion. I mean, it should be reversed, but that's a whole day. And all the experts today, they realized that that was just a marketing stunt that we all bought, nicely as a Kool-Aid, and we've been. Breakfast of champs, let's have some cereal and that's good, right? So that's not the case. But you're right, you eat protein. Now the question is, I mean, it depends on your meal intake and depends on your body size, male, female, those things can obviously, vary from one person to the other. But the main thing is that you need to have a certain point of protein on a regular basis, otherwise you lose that much. What is I mean, I think you refer to it a little bit, like the grams, per, body weight. What would that be, I guess as a take for our audiences to have as a rule? What would they use to gauge, what they take?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And so, I mean, of course, the most ideal way would be to actually do the calculation one. So, if you're taking your body weight in pounds, and the research says somewhere between 0.7 and 1.2 grams per pound of goal body weight is a really good place to aim for. To simplify it, like I said, I just try to aim for like a pound per gram of goal body weight. So if someone is a 160 pound female and she wants to ideally be more 145, I would aim for somewhere around that. You could round that up to a 150 or round that down to 140. And for getting a better picture of how much that actually is, I do recommend to almost everyone to track their food intake for at least a couple of weeks or a week or two. And it always sounds tedious when I say that, weighing out your food, entering it into a food tracking app that can be MyFitnessPal, Chronometer, My Macros. There's countless out there, but they're usually free, but it's so eye-opening. And I'm saying that from my own personal perspective, because I came from a place of thinking, I eat so healthy, why don't I look the way that I want to look? And essentially, I found out that, for example, my peanut butter that I thought was a great source of protein only had like 3 grams of protein. Or then I realized that, okay, there's actually nothing wrong with having some sweet potato and potato, because I was so afraid of carbs. They're actually lower in calories than the half a cup of olive oil I'm drizzling over my salad. So it's just really eye-opening if we're tracking our food intake for a little while and we can actually see, oh, how much even in size is in a breast of chicken or so. But if you don't want to do that, a good general rule of thumb would be something like a palm-sized portion of lean protein in each meal is a great minimum sort of place to start off with. So in your breakfast, that could be like a small omelet consisting of egg whites and a whole egg. That could be a cup of low-fat Greek yogurt with some oats and some fruit mixed into for your breakfast. For your lunch, that could be, a palm-sized portion of your chicken breast, as I was saying, with some veggies and some sweet potato. For your dinner, might be some fish or some it could be tofu as well if you're plant-based. When I'm saying protein is important, by the way, you can follow this approach with a plant-based or with a meat included, meat and fish included diet. It doesn't really matter. But that's kind of the general rule of thumb I would like to give, at least a palm-sized portion.
No, you beat me to that. I was going to ask you, like, plant-based versus not plant-based. So you handed me. But it's funny because this whole thing is really feasible for everyone, and we can all do it. And it's just a matter of being aware and being consistent again. And I think that's it. I mean, you've already given us the magic, formula of what that looks like. So all of us, between that and the exercise that is consistent, I think we all can thrive and be whatever at I guess our dream body that we want. I mean, I think everybody's able to do that. The question is how to get them to there, and also not only get them there, but also maintain them, from that point on if they had. And by the way, everybody has it ups and down. I mean, we all kind of weaken a little bit here and there. No matter how solid you are, there's a day where you're like, okay, or sometimes you let go and you realize quickly that those pounds are gonna gain on you very fast. I mean, you can literally be good for months and then a couple of days and you're like, just whoop, 5 pounds up. How the hell did that happen? Now, lose 5 pounds in a day, it's probably not gonna happen. So that's really, it's amazing how quickly you can gain pounds and how hard it is to actually shed them, right? So it's very difficult to do that. Now, your work, regardless where you are in the world, you do this and help people. So how can people actually watching and listening right now work with you to get them to that nice little, body that and health, level? Because I think when you have a good balanced exercise and nutrition, you will have a good and healthier body. Ultimately, probably less problems in terms of, and even you mentioned something about menopause and perimenopause, and that's another group of women aged where that's very difficult. All these things actually are affecting, and I'm assuming you work more with women than men, but at the end of the day, we all have the same needs in terms of body. Obviously, we have differences in how our systems work, but at the end of the day, you're helping people get to that point, right? So how do people reach out to you? How can they work with you?
Absolutely. Yeah, I work with people all over the world and mostly women. Yeah, maybe about 80% women, but also some amazing men in there. And I just wanted to say that I would employ you anytime because you said the two important things. You said balance and consistency. And again, if people want to walk away with anything from this podcast, please take those two words to heart and put them into practice because that's truly the foundation of everything, in my opinion. And not just do we help people achieve the body that they want and live healthier with those principles, but also have a healthier mindset. And that's another whole podcast episode in and of itself, where we can talk about why people often don't take action on hiring a coach or even just embracing a healthy lifestyle on their own. Because often it goes back to not feeling worthy or not feeling like you deserve it, and then we have limiting beliefs and self-sabotage that keep us back even further. So lots to dig into. But for sure, people can find me mostly on Instagram is where I'm most active, and the handle there is Nutrition Coaching and Life. That's the same name for the website, Nutrition Coaching and Life. And I'm also on LinkedIn and on YouTube with those same handles. And the podcast is the Nutrition and Life podcast. So just want to say thank you so much for having me. It's been a really fun conversation.
Oh, a pleasure. And the fun was mine. So I enjoyed this. And certainly, well, by the way, you mentioned something about like it could be a whole podcast on its own. I mean, you already have one and you have, a lot of information there. So I will also use and guide people to reach out and listen to your podcast because they can get all the extras. I mean, we can only do so much in 1 hour and you have plenty of other hours available to them with all the different discussions and different pointers that they can apply with in real life. And certainly they can reach out to you on social media, and hopefully, they can get some guidance and transit to a better, self. I mean, because at the end of the day, I mean, that builds also self-esteem. It builds a lot of stuff and gets you happier with your family, your friends, your work. Everything changes when you're feeling righteous, right? If you're not feeling good, everything else sucks, right? So, well, Lisa, thank you so much for really, a great discussion and a lot of good insights and really solid stuff. I mean, from even your experience alive to the nutrition to the nuggets that you've shared today with us. So appreciate all that, and thank you so much.
No, thank you. Thank you for your time.